Hey guys, this episode of The Chase Down is brought to you by Pure on WGN. It is about the Mennonite mob smuggling drugs from Mexico directly up here to Canada. They even smuggled it close to where I live in Manitoba, which is wild. Think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness meets Narcos. Get hooked on Pure. Series premiere Wednesday at 10, 9 central, only on WGN America. Available on DirecTV channel 307, dish channel 239, or check your local cable listings. Also, before we get to this podcast with Ken Carmen, I want to encourage you guys to subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. It really is the best way to support the podcast. We really appreciate your love and support. So hit subscribe, take that time to hit subscribe. And if you want to be part of our Discord channel, take a screenshot of either you subscribing or leaving a review on iTunes for us and email chasedownpod@gmail.com. And now today's episode. Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers have won the Zion battle against the Chicago Bulls. They put up an embarrassing performance, but it helps. Actually, it doesn't really help the lottery odds because the bottom three teams have the same lottery odds. That's great. Obviously, the team isn't too good right now, but we still got a good podcast for you. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. I'd just like everyone to know that before we started rolling and before our esteemed guest joined up, you tried to play devil's advocate for this team. And after a 16-point home loss to the Chicago Bulls, and I haven't forgiven you yet.
That's okay. I mean, you haven't forgiven me for so many things that I don't think you're ever going to cash that in or hold me accountable, so I appreciate that.
That's fair.
As you mentioned, we do have a great guest today from 923 The Fan, the man, the myth, the legend. If you know us and not Ken, I really find that hard to believe. I don't think that that Venn diagram is very big, but Ken Carmen is joining us. How's it going today, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate having you on. There's no way. There's got to, because remember, you guys talk a lot of basketball, and we always end up talking a lot of Browns. So there's definitely people who have heard of you guys and listened to you guys and have never heard of me.
Well, I actually think that's
not true. Go ahead.
I actually think that's an interesting spot to start the pod because,
go ahead.
You know, we were kind of talking about what we wanted to talk about with you, and for the majority of our time being Cavs fans, you know, we're two youngish guys. Starting to get washed up, but we're not quite there yet. Majority of our time being Cavs fans, the Cavs have been better than the Browns by a pretty significant margin, especially, obviously, the entire LeBron stretch, part one and two. How have you kind of sensed the hierarchy in the city now that Browns mania is starting to pick up?
I still don't have a full gauge on it just yet. Like Lima and I, we would discuss it, and I could never really disagree with them because I wasn't sure. Because there were so many people who were of older age in their 40s and 50s who, you know, tell you about the good old days when the Browns were really, really good and just how much they dominated the city. And Lima and I would talk about, like, man, you know, if you're about 35, 36, somewhere in there, younger, you really don't have any good memories. I mean, really strong, consistently good memories of Browns football. But there have been some really good Cavs seasons, and people like a winner. So it was a question of whether or not for a younger generation, the Cavs are actually the dominant team. And I think that this last, you know, the LeBron years – and even a little bit when we were really young and there were some good basketball teams then and we all have our favorites from the old days, I think that's really helped improve the status of the Cavs. There was a time where the older people would tell you that they were just about dead. And that a guy, like, I don't know if you guys have ever talked to Kenny Rota. Kenny Rota would always talk about when we were kids, mm-hmm. That they might leave. Like they could go. You don't know how lucky you have them, this, that, and the other. Back when the gun zone, even when they had Gund Arena, He would talk about how nervous he was for the future of the franchise. Then LeBron came here. The NBA seems to really like being a big market, or a team that's having a team in a market like Cleveland, They seem to really enjoy that. So I still think it's got to get worked out over the next few years where football's just shooting fish in a barrel. There's only so many dates. Usually if it's doing well, it's going to be the top billing in any city that it's in. But I still need to see it over the course of so many years before I can actually say, oh, yeah, it's absolutely number one and don't worry about it. It has a head start because of the sport, but there still needs to be more consistency than just 1-7, 8-1 season where we're really excited about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I do get the sense that everyone has. If anything, the Browns' kind of resurgence has given everyone kind of just an excuse to ignore the Cavs, which, boy, do we wish we had that excuse. I remember a couple of years ago we joked about, after a series of particularly uninspiring play, just starting the episode and pretending we were an Orlando Magic podcast now.
Yeah.
We should have done that this year.
Hey, that was definitely a good bit. And it's been an interesting experience because I've talked about this before, but especially as someone that is an outsider, at least from the Cleveland sports.
Both market. Of us are, you know, like I'm from Columbus, which is closer, but neither of us have a finger on the pulse.
Slightly closer drive than Winnipeg, but
just a little bit.
I just remember through the first time when LeBron left, like that was actually the period that really solidified it for me as a Cavs fan, because that's when I could really identify. And I find there's so many similarities between the Cleveland and Winnipeg sports kind of psyche, where you have two cities that both cities had lost their favorite team. Winnipeg's obviously a hockey town. We lost the team. We got it back. Cleveland had the same thing with the Browns, kind of that underdog mentality. And I found that kind of the sharing those emotions and kind of sharing the disappointment was actually what kind of solidified it. But then this year is just totally different because then, I mean, I could watch the games and kind of check out if I needed to. But this time around, there's no escaping. It's basically like Clockwork Orange where my eyes are just...
Now we're paid to do it. Damn it. I do wonder if... because I do feel like that first post-decision Cavs team, especially early on, obviously they were terrible and a lot of people stopped watching. There was at least a certain energy around this team early. And I just wonder if, like, the way that we all seem to mostly be at peace about LeBron leaving this time has kind of led to an indifference with this Cavs team from the fan base at large, you know? It's like there's no FU or regional pride in saying, hey, this is still our squad, like it was when you get spurned on national television. Do you think that's fair, Ken?
I think it's absolutely true. I think it's absolutely true because they didn't win the first time. Now they've won. I don't know how you guys feel about the Lakers. I've seen the Lakers about 6 or 7 times this year, and I've seen them with and without LeBron. They seem to be treading water to me. I know that, you know, well, they can get this and that and the other. I think it's a deeper-rooted problem. I really do. I think Kyrie was the first. I think Kyrie was the guy who kind of sounded the alarm of what younger NBA players feel. And again, if you guys disagree with any of this, please correct me at any time.
Yeah, I'm not shy with that. And I definitely think there's an element of that. But what's disappointing me with the Lakers is when he went to the Heat, you could kind of rationalize it. It's frustrating, yes. But look, they built a contender. And then for the Lakers to say, well, we're hanging on to all our young assets here. We're not going to trade it for help now. It feels like wasting LeBron. Like, I don't necessarily have ill will towards LeBron for leaving. It made sense. Things were kind of running its course here. But, I mean, for them to really hang on to those assets, it would be like if the Cavs decided to hang on to Deion Waiters for too long instead of trading him for essentially an entire supporting cast. It's just kind of disappointing to watch from afar. That's my sense of it.
I couldn't agree more. I really couldn't agree more. It feels like he's retiring early.
Yeah.
There's not much talent.
Yeah, like he's consulting with the Lakers instead of, like, are you going to compete? Are you not? Are you just waiting around? What are you going to do here? Like, when he went to the Heat, you're exactly right. Hey, he's got Dwayne Wade. He's playing with Dwayne Wade. Bosch is there to round it out. It's a big, big deal. Now it's just, well, he's in L.A. because all his businesses are there. Like, what does that mean?
Well, maybe we'll all feel stupid when Anthony Davis just ends up there, you know? Like, but as of now, just I'm very uncomfortable. And I think I kind of come down the same way as, I don't have any ill will towards LeBron, but I feel resentful that the Lakers are kind of taking this this great gift, which is having LeBron on your team, and sort of just like squandering it. Like, mm-hmm. It kind of bothers me that they don't seem to have any urgency with a guy who is 35 years old. You're asking him to play power forward almost exclusively. You're making him run more than he's ever run. He just got hurt with the most major injury of his career. And it's just like, oh, yeah, well, we got a couple years to get this figured out. I was like, no, you don't. He might get bad soon.
Yes. Yes.
Like, we don't like to say that, but Kareem got bad, and he's like the ultimate example of longevity. Like, everyone, father time comes for us all. So I'm just disappointed that this is what they put around him.
It's not even him being bad. It's him. Look, this is a serious injury. All right, is this the beginning? Is this the beginning of the injury starting to hit him? Like, Kobe, it happened out of nowhere, and then it just didn't stop. Like, he had a few injuries here and there during the career, but, like, the serious ones, it happened, and then it just didn't stop happening. The knee, the leg, then the Achilles, the whole thing.
Well, I remember we thought that was going to happen with his back.
Yes.
When his first year back in Cleveland.
Yeah, yes. I thought we got damaged goods. I was like, of course, of course. Like,
so many people were nervous about that. Yes.
Ew. It does feel that way. I don't know. It's the Lakers, like, we've spent a decent amount of time talking about them, but, like, in a lot of ways, like, this team is still inextricably linked to LeBron. And, you know, I don't know how long it's going to be before that's not the case, before we kind of stop defining everything by the team's relationship with LeBron. Mm-hmm. Kind of just feels like they have to build a team that's at least decent, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think people link the Heat with LeBron, do they?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think so. I think that they're kind of, they do their thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
their thing is bad, but they do their own thing.
Yeah, it's not that good, but they do their own thing. With this club, because the last time I remember sitting there and I wanted LeBron to lose so bad to Dallas, and then they lost.
Right.
And they won against Oklahoma City.
Correct, yeah.
And when they won against Oklahoma City, I immediately, like the next day, because I just didn't want to hear about him, like, all right, what are you doing for me? I can't sit here and just hate a guy and hope he loses. What are you doing for me as a fan? Who are you guys bringing in? Let's do this. And there was always, like, that weird connection with LeBron, but I didn't want to believe, like, he was coming back. Mm-hmm. So it was just, what are you doing to be a better basketball team? And now there's – I don't know if there's any sort of hard line that I can draw that would make me switch and go, what are the Cavs doing? It's either LeBron retires, which that's not going to happen, you know, really anytime soon. Dan Gilbert sells the team, which you always hear a whole bunch of rumors, but I don't think he's going to sell the team anytime soon.
Right.
What else can you guys think of?
I don't know. I think it's about building a culture, which they just have no – I don't think it's one player. Ken, yeah. Like, I think it's about building a culture that exists outside of the magnitude of LeBron. Like, it's here's what Cavaliers basketball is. Like, at any point, what has Cavaliers basketball been sans LeBron in the 4 years he was gone while he was in Miami and the 1 year he's been gone so far? It's just been nonsense. It's just been garbage.
The ridiculousness of just every, like, the everyday minutia has still been weird.
Yeah, there ain't no grit and grind here. There isn't, like, some cool, like, or even, like, the Celtics, like, you know, last year or 2 years ago, where it's like, hey, you know, these guys are gritty and figure out how to win games. Even they're more than the sum of their parts. Like, the Cavs have never been more than the sum of their parts.
So, if they just, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to be depressed.
Well, let me ask you. Say they get the number one, and they get Zion. Because he's this big, he's a superstar, he'll sell tickets. Well, he's a superstar now in college. He'll sell tickets, and if he develops, then he should be something pretty – it should be franchise-changing. It'll still be a little bleak here in the first couple of years.
Sure.
But it should be franchise-changing. Does that reset them as a franchise?
I think it does, depending on the stability they show after that, because hitting on a pick is one part of it. But I think what the Cavs have been mocked for is just kind of not having a consistent process. Like, the results may have worked out at times, but they've always been criticized on how they kind of went about it. And I think how
even when they won a title.
Right, exactly. So I think how they go about building around whoever they get in the draft is going to be really important. Whether or not Dan Gilbert actually keeps a GM beyond his first contract will be interesting. How often are they firing coaches? Colin Sexton is probably going to go into game 83 of his career with three head coaches. I mean, that's
hopefully,
pretty typical.
Honestly.
Yeah, hopefully. But like, to me, I find it interesting too, because the Cavs obviously made an effort to try to keep some of that culture, to keep some connection of that title team, by keeping Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, J.R. Smith had said that he was
Channing Frye.
Yeah. J.R. said he was going to be a leader. That didn't necessarily work out, but part of why I want the Cavs to get the second pick and end up with RJ Barrett is, like, to me, I can kind of talk myself into, okay, you got Tristan, you got Love, you got Barrett as your front court, you got Sexton, maybe Jetty, you can work some rotation players into there, and it has a connection to that former team. I just wonder, like, if that would be something that would resonate with Cavs fans, or do they just want to go scorched earth? I don't really have a good sense of that yet.
You're not going to like this. They're going to want the name. They're going to want the name.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
We talk about Barrett all the time. It's like, man, he can hit threes. You know, they can do those things. He's more built for the NBA game now, where it's like, the biggest argument about Zion, can he shoot?
Yeah.
You can't just go – unless you are LeBron and you are still not him, you can't really play that type of game. And so what you're saying is probably – If they get the number two pick and they get a good player like him, people are going to be still disappointed.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
We have been watching. There's people who – I'm going to preach to the choir here. I've watched more college basketball this year than I have since I was in high school. Basically, yeah. I've watched more the last time I watched this much college basketball in a season, I was a virgin. So, I watched this much college basketball.
Wasn't ready for that.
And there are guys who watch this. There's guys who say they watch it. There's guys who watch it, and then there's guys who say they watch it. And right. When they watch it, they only watch Zion Williamson dunk highlights. And so now it's just, oh my God, this guy, this Zeus of a man, and he's gonna. And if they don't get that ping pong ball the right way, and I know, like, the rules are different now over the last couple years now about the draft. They're going to be disappointed. I hope they don't boo him or anything like that, for crying out loud. He's not going to be Zion Williamson, and they're not going to buy tickets, and they're going to want a name. And in 3 years, he can end up being a superstar, and then they're going to do it. It's just going to pull it back a little bit. And then, because the owner's a fan, who knows how he'll react about the kid.
Right.
I don't know.
But, Ken, my counter to this is, you know, we've seen the Cavs hit a surefire star with the first overall pick in Kyrie Irving, and they still couldn't build the right culture to be a winner until LeBron came and functionally bailed them out. You know, like, I know we talk about how they did have all the assets in place to do something, but Kevin Love wasn't going to come there and agree to re-sign without LeBron coming. You know, so I just think it's about good process, and that's kind of why I don't think it matters who they draft while Dan Gilbert is running as messy of a ship as he runs. I mean,
that's why – which one of you two – it was one of you two I saw on Twitter the other day – said you would be for an extension for Tristan.
That was me.
Both of us are, I both think. But yeah. I think Zion would complicate that.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but anyway, that derails it. Justin was the one who made this.
It might, but I'm trying to think about Kyrie's first season. Can he count on Tristan – can a young guy – and I know Zion would complicate that – but could a young guy look at Tristan Thompson or Kevin and have some sort of a shoulder to lean on? Would they take that role with him that no one did for Kyrie? And it was basically his father, which that became a
huge problem. Didn't work out great.
Exactly. So it's like if you take one of these kids and you just put him in there and, well, here you are. You're going to run into some problems. And we ran into some problems with Kyrie. Hell, Kyrie's still having problems trying to be a leader, obviously.
Yeah.
So you drop this kid in here, and it's just, well, we'll end up doing it again. And guys will get hit in the mouth in a locker room, and you have problems over there. So when you guys talk about him, yeah, obviously he's a contributor when he's healthy. He can contribute and play well for you and get rebounds and get second chances, and he can pop it back out. And if you got a guy who can actually hit threes, it can help out. But what he can do maybe as a veteran, like, hey, man, he's seen
it all. A culture setter.
Yeah, it might just – because there's things like – hey, man, guys like me, you know, the whole the New York club thing and everything like that, and the very famous wife, you know, that's tough for guys like me to swallow. But that's everyday living in the NBA. I think it's warped to say this. A guy like him can actually contribute to the maturation in a hurry for one of these young guys out of Duke, or maybe Moran, or one of these other players.
Yeah, well, I mean, with these a lot of pro athletes, I always wonder like how real the marriage is. Like maybe his mistake was doing it publicly. Like maybe there's an understanding there. You never know. But part of why I said earlier that I want the Cavs to potentially get number two and get a wing. It doesn't even necessarily need to be Barrett, but it's the idea that with Zion, it would force you to rebuild so much of what you have. And I just don't trust the Cavs that much. Like I'd rather have a guy slot alongside known commodities in Tristan and Love. But from the leadership standpoint, I think that's a big part of why I'd like to see Tristan stay here. And I wasn't sure how he was going to react this season, especially a guy that's had such long seasons alongside LeBron, was an energy guy, whether he'd still be able to get up for these January games where just there's nothing going on for the team. But he really stepped up as a leader and has been a strong presence there. And I think that's something that you can't really take for granted. And it's definitely encouraging because, I mean, I had heard things back from when he was a teenager through like the last decade here of just how involved he was with Team Canada, with the young guys. He was the first NBA player to really kind of blaze that trail and continue to play with the national team, and just the way that he's taken guys under his wing, and the fact that that's carried over to the Cavs is encouraging. And I don't know if you necessarily are going to be able to find a lot of guys that are going to be that leader in Cleveland in that way.
Well, the thing with Tristan is like, ultimately, I think he is one of the few bright spots in a pretty dreary season for the Cavs, for both on-court growth and off-court leadership. And the thing that, you know, people who kind of say, hey, you know, play the tanking game, get what you can for Love, get what you can for Tristan. Like the phrase I keep using is the juice worth the squeeze, because, you know, both these guys aren't like no doubt guys for on the trade market where you're going to get two unprotected firsts,
yeah,
or even a first in the case of Tristan. Like what's the value in salary dumping him for a couple seconds for a crack at maybe a guy who might be your ninth man someday? It's it's not like he is so good. And I feel this way about Love as well. I don't feel like either of these guys are so good that they prevent you from being near the top of the lottery every year.
No,
but they are good enough to provide an infrastructure. Look at how Colin Sexton has struggled without an infrastructure, without Love, with Thompson in and out of the lineup, with, you know, I think Justin said before the pod, the Cavs are down like 6-7 rotation guys. And he's really struggled because the Cavs haven't created an environment that is capable of fostering much growth.
Should I be worried about him already long term?
Maybe. I don't know, man. Like I think there's a world in which we can both acknowledge he has not been good. He's not been good for long stretches. But he also hasn't really had the chance to be good. I think that the stuff he's not, you know, I was saying this, I was doing a hit on 92.3 with Jake Chapman, I think just a couple days ago. And I was just saying that, you know, all of these things that he's just mediocre at, like his handle is just okay right now. The jumper can't really pull off the dribble. You know, if just one of those things goes from meh to good in the offseason, everything gets easier. The problem is that nothing is really at the level it needs to get to right now, and it's kind of making it hard for him to succeed at any area. But once you have something you can really lean on, other than just I'm fast, I think maybe things start to look different, and we know he's a guy with a kind of a famously good work ethic, good competitor, but it's been pretty ugly as of late.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's almost like he's trying to find his rhythm. I forget which game it was. It might have been the Utah game.
That was an ugly game.
Which one was it? God, he turned right around. Lima, like, called me during it. And he goes, did you see what he did? And I go, what? He goes, man, they're losing by 20. He's turning around and he's talking you know what. And they're just, I mean, they're making fun of him. Those are making fun of him out there, and it's making him mad. And now he's just out there just chucking everything. And good God, he goes, there's nothing. He's not, I go, well, he's getting minutes. He goes, it doesn't matter. He's not learning anything.
Yeah, yeah. Go, well, that's definitely.
And that's why you don't fire your coach four games into the season, Ken. Because now your whole coaching staff is asleep at the wheel because they know they're not working towards anything.
God, I want to say was it Indiana? I forget which one. He calls me up because he goes, he's cussing at the bench. He's down 20. He hits a shot. He's cussing back at the bench. He goes, they're making fun of him. He goes, these are worthless minutes. He's not, it's just making him angry. Like, he was upset about it. He is worried.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, there's cause for concern. I think it is not a lock that this kid turns into a good player right now. And
yeah, but know, I
Johnson, I paint a rosy picture, but it's been pretty ugly.
Yeah, I think the encouraging thing would be how he takes a disappointing season and these lost minutes and what he focuses on in the offseason. Because as you mentioned, he does have a good work ethic. And I think a work ethic is tougher to teach than a lot of the other skills. Like, he's displayed an ability to draw contact at times. He's displayed an ability to pass at times. It's not like those are absent skills. But he was a flawed player coming in. You don't necessarily get a building block with the eighth pick very often. There's obviously reasons for concern, but I think there's some reason to believe that he might turn into kind of a starter or a rotation player at the very least. But yeah, as you said, a lot of the season is just kind of lost minutes for him. And that's definitely just
for everyone, man. That's what's so disappointing. And that's just been the way it's going to be. Your coaching staff, I don't get. Ken, do you get the impression that this coaching staff is super engaged?
No, I don't get the impression anybody's engaged. I think,
how could you be?
I think in a lot of these games, like today, they came out, they fart around the whole game, and the Bulls are doing it too. So you know, but you know, I kept hearing this thing over the last couple of weeks. I'm not gonna name names, but I'm getting, well, Ken, I mean, it's just. It's refreshing to see this team just try to build. I'm going, build what? What are they building? You got guys who are upset. Well, you got Jordan Clarkson who's talking. I mean, it just feels like they're using. And now I'm getting upset. I'm getting flustered. We're using Kevin Love, his absence. We're using these guys as some sort of an excuse. Well, you know, Tristan isn't here, and Kevin isn't here. And I'm going, okay, so that gives you just every right and just an excuse to go lay down? Because you don't see – it feels as if what it is now, it's already an NBA hell. Mm-hmm. Now, it changes – God, it's such a bleak thing to say. It changes once you get some draft guys and you can still be bad record-wise and still play – fun basketball. And
look at the Nets the last couple of years. Nets have been fun to watch.
Yes. You can, okay, I can see these guys in a couple of years. Hey, these guys are really starting to get the look of it. Yeah, they're going to have terrible nights. They're going to have stupid nights. They're going to be pointing fingers at each other here and there. But they can develop, and they can do that. Right now, we're just stuck in this holding pattern, watching them thinking, all right, I guess, you know, when's the draft? What's going to happen here? What can I unload for this? What can I do there? And it sucks because we're coming up with all these ideas, and you guys just hit it on the head. There's nothing you can do. I can't trade away Kevin Love for unprotected first-round picks. I can't do the same thing with Tristan Thompson. So what am I supposed to do? Well, I'm supposed to sit here and watch this team get blown out by 20 every night, and it would be fun if they seem to be trying. It's just empty, hollow points that they put in.
Well, Ken.
Yeah.
Ken, this is my whole point, is that there's no organizational structure or clarity. This is a team that lied to itself all summer about how they were going to be a playoff team. And then when they got smacked in the mouth by reality, they fired their coach six games. Was it four or six games in?
Yep.
Either way, not very many games. And now you're dealing with a lost season with 76 games to go. They have been playing out the string since game seven. How are you supposed to succeed in that environment?
And my problem was, and I do this, is that I feel like I'm part of the problem because I signed off on it. Like, when they signed Kevin, I'm going, well, you know, I can't – like, Lima was insane. And I always use him as the reference because I'll never say I know more basketball than Lima. Mm-hmm. And I just, he's the guy I always talk to it about. So I'm sorry for always referencing him.
No, no problem.
I always say I know more about basketball than Justin. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm going, well, you know, you can't fault a franchise for still trying to make the playoffs and still trying to entertain the fans. And then they go out and they did what they did at four games into the season or whatever it was, six games into the season. And I'm thinking, man, you didn't even get – there's no adversity. You just started off the season.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you're firing guys, and you're just doing everything – you're doing everything that guys accuse you of, that fans get mad at them for saying because it's the truth.
All right, guys, we're going to get back to our interview with Ken Carmen in just a second. But right now, I want to talk to you about one of our sponsors, and that is MyPillow. And like the rest of us, you probably made a New Year's resolution this year. If you're planning on eating better, exercising more, being more patient, kinder, or whatever else, it all starts with a good night's rest. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the 4-pack special and enter my promo code COZY. And you'll get 2 premium MyPillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. It's amazing what a difference a great pillow makes. If you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on their 4-pack, shipping is absolutely free. That's right, no shipping. Zippo, zilch, nada. And don't forget about their 60-day money-back guarantee. There's nothing better than the gift of restorative sleep. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the 4-pack special, and use my code COZY to get 2 premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com or call 1-800-966-1472. And remember, my promo code can be used for any offer on MyPillow.com. Again, that's promo code COZY. And now, Carter, why don't you tell us about our other sponsor?
Well, Justin, while you're getting cozy with your MyPillow, why don't you binge some television? You've heard plenty of stories about drug cartels. They're all over the news, Justin. But the crime ring you've probably never heard of unless you listen to this podcast every week. It's one of the most dangerous in the world. They are the Mennonite mob. You heard right, Mennonites. 99% of them are kind, God-fearing people. I'd even nudge that up to 99.5%. But there's one group that has smuggled millions of dollars of narcotics from Mexico to Canada, up where you live, probably to you. Who's to say? Wednesday, starting January 23rd at 10/9 Central, WGN America presents the new TV series, Pure, based on the true events of the Mennonite mob. Show is about Noah Funk, the newly elected Mennonite pastor, who is determined to rid his community of the drug cartel. But Mr. Funk finds himself way in over his head, and the good pastor, along with his wife, will do some very bad things, all in the name of protecting their family. Think of Pure as Breaking Bad meets Witness meets Narcos. I've actually never heard of Witness, but I've definitely heard of the other two, and they're very popular. Get hooked on Pure Wednesday, starting January 23rd at 10/9 Central, only on WGN America. WGN America is available on DirecTV Channel 307, Dish Channel 239, or just check your local cable listings for the channel in your area.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily buy the whole playoff thing either, and I think Kevin Love needing foot surgery just kind of reset the calculus, because they're like, okay, we have a bunch of specialists that need to play alongside a high usage guy, and the only guy capable of playing that high usage is now gone with foot surgery. So at that point, they were just selling everything off, and I don't know if Ty Lue wanted out too, and it was a mutual thing or what the deal was, but it was obviously dishonest from the beginning. I thought it was an attempt by Dan Gilbert in the front office to try to have trade leverage with Kyle Korver, George Hill, and the other veterans that people figured that they'd either be moving or buying out. And obviously, it's also it's trying to sell the fans on it too, who were forced to buy season tickets in like January of last year, January and February of last year. And obviously, there's not discounts coming without LeBron leaving. So that's obviously a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people.
And it's such a double-edged thing, because it sounds like I'm laying everything at the feet of Dan Gilbert. Well, I have to. He's the owner.
I'm on board
for
that.
You can go for it. Yeah. Well,
this is.
I'll tell you this.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be something you probably disagree with. I have a theory about Dan Gilbert as the owner. I think the NBA. I know that they. I ran this past Lloyd, and he got all he was all up in arms over it. And I go, well, think about this, Jason.
Well, now I love this. Now go ahead.
Because I said you know, the whole first round pick, I knew it was kind of, you know, BS to begin with. But I said, the NBA, those owners and Adam Silver and everybody, and I don't know about the other owners, but I think the league office, I know that that Dan Gilbert can be difficult at times. I understand that he can be obviously knee-jerk in his reactions and can be too much of a fan. And obviously he wears his heart on his sleeve and it's just one great big, you know what in contest with everybody else. However, and there is a however, I am hard pressed to name an owner who's willing to spend, even at his own peril, who's willing to spend what it takes and go into the luxury tax and do all that stuff. And I know you guys might be rolling your eyes. That's fine. Who's willing to do that in a market like Cleveland?
Yeah,
I think the NBA likes that. I think the NBA, like Bill Simmons a few weeks ago, might have been a couple of months ago now, was all up in arms. Cleveland can't get the number one pick again. They don't deserve the number one pick. And as an organization, I don't think they do. As a fan, I'm like, yeah, Cleveland always gets the number one pick. You can go cram it. Mm-hmm. But as an organization, like, no. If we were doing this podcast, if we were talking about the Jazz every single year or every single day, no, Cleveland does not deserve the number one pick. But looking at it from just a business perspective, you have an owner who's willing to go into the luxury tax, who's proven it. He's psychotic about winning. He's psychotic about taking control of his team back, even for the right or the wrong. And if they are able to get a winner, those people will show up again, and they will back the owner what it is. I think for the NBA and for their business, I think it's almost it's a perfect situation.
No, I think NBA likes having him. Just don't like having him on my own terms. Like, the thing with Dan is, you know, when you have owners that are willing to spend, I think we've seen this with the Knicks under Dolan, who has also written some pretty big checks, is you can stumble into some stretches of success. But you'll kind of find that no matter what you do, that success is never sustainable because of the, you know, the inconsistency at the very top.
True.
I don't think anyone will ever talk while Dan Gilbert is running this team about what a top-notch organization the Cavs are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they can't come up with a culture outside of LeBron. And that's why they're as bad as they are this year.
Yep.
I think they might be at a
sweet spot. I can't fight. Can't fight those.
Yeah, I think they might be at a sweet spot with Dan Gilbert, though, where the one thing I will really credit him for, and the thing I caution people, like, I'd like to see him sell the team. I'd like to see more stability. And I think that if you had a owner that wasn't necessarily willing to spend as much, but would spend smarter and hire the right people, I think that might be advantageous. But I do like with Gilbert, this is probably a funny way of putting it, but the Cavs are always actively active. Like, they're going in some direction. They're never just existing like an Orlando Magic. If they're screwing up, it's in spectacular fashion, and that obviously helps us from a content standpoint.
They always stay interesting.
It also helps them get to the bottom quicker, which you need in the NBA. You need to be at one of those extremes. And the fact that he's willing to spend money now, even with them being so terrible, to take on bad money in order to get additional assets, I don't think there's a lot of owners in the league that would be willing to do that. So I think you're at a sweet spot where he's willing to spend money, but with LeBron not being here, he's probably not as involved in the day-to-day. He doesn't have the same
interest. Yeah, he's a better owner when he's bored by the team.
Exactly. Yes. So you might be able to actually build something here. And I think that this teardown, it's not even necessarily a teardown, but I think this 1 year of just total bleak basketball was necessary from an asset standpoint. As long as they hit on the draft and have the right people in place, hire the right coaches, allow Kobe Altman to do his job, I think that there's a chance at turning the culture around. And maybe I'm just an optimist, but that's the way that I see things.
Well, that's the only thing you have to do is hope. I mean, if I can sit here and hope the Browns can turn around for 20 years, I think I can hope out for the Cavs for a couple of seasons, for crying out loud. But I just think the NBA looks at it like this is long-term stuff with me, where I asked the guys in the room the one day, because we were talking about Dan Gilbert, and it became a thing where it's like good Dan, bad Dan, that type of thing. And I'm thinking, would Dan Gilbert, and I asked Jason this off air, I said, would Dan Gilbert let James Harden go if he owned the Oklahoma City Thunder?
I don't think so. No.
Would he have made that trade? There's not a chance in hell. He would have spent himself not into destitution. He's just the guy who's got the pockets to do that. He would have spent himself into oblivion into the luxury tax to make that thing go.
And yeah, he would have. He is not Robert Sarver. There are worse owners out there.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the league sees that and goes, it's a league of great players that I think every single fan in every single city like ours, they have their favorite player who plays for the team, and then they have a favorite player who plays for another. They have their favorite team, they have a player who plays for another team. But this isn't New York or L.A. or any one of the big five markets. It's Cleveland. It's a good sports town for the most part. And it's one of those places where you can thrive. And I think they keep wanting to give him a chance because they know he'll spend the money. The only problem is exactly what you guys say. He continuously gets in his own way every couple of years, whether it be with the general manager or players or something. There's always something that's weird that ends up throwing everything into a tailspin.
Yeah, I guess that's just the reality. Hopefully they can stumble onto something and maybe he can learn a few lessons, but it just feels like instability is going to be the name of the game. Mm-hmm. To that end, Ken, I am interested. How would you rank the three owners in Cleveland right now?
Do you want to just leave it at the side or do you want to give it a ranking?
I think Jimmy is starting to turn a corner. I thought it was a good move of him to sit in the seats and not be up on the dais with Freddie Kitchens during the hiring. I think that was a smart move, knowing that if he gets up there and he starts talking, people start to get worried about that. So I think that, and if they win, eventually he will turn a corner. Because I, you know, being in there, I know that he spends like crazy to try to make them better. He gets in his own way. But he's still third. I think.
This is where it gets hard, I think.
Yeah.
Genuinely difficult.
It's a very unpopular thing for me to say what I'm about to say. I think Dan Gilbert's second. I think Paul Dolan is first. People call the Dolans cheap. They say they're bad owners. If they were bad owners, they wouldn't even have been in the World Series a couple years ago. They made a run at it. They just didn't have enough. They played well enough to make everybody mad. This isn't Pittsburgh.
That doesn't sound like Cleveland.
I mean, it's not Pittsburgh. I'd rather be here than Pittsburgh. Like Pittsburgh, they had, two good years? And that was basically just the play-in game. And they had Andrew McCutchen, and then it all fell apart, and now nobody cares about him ever again, and they sit in that beautiful ballpark, and no one goes in there. You have the Indians where, yeah, we have attendance problems, big attendance problems. And it makes you nervous, and it makes you start to think, okay, are they just little fish in a big pond? And I think that's probably what it is. I think that this is going to be nuts. They need a guy like Dan Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Gilbert is the I've always said he's the George Steinbrenner of the NBA. He desperately wants control. I think that he would if Dan Gilbert owned the Cleveland Indians. You would hear about the Indians in on Bryce Harper, on Machado, Mike Trout, Francisco Lindor extensions. You'd hear about it all. It'd all be believable because mm-hmm. he'll go into his personal.
Yeah, the nice thing about baseball is you do have that huge margin for error if you are a reckless spinner. Yes,
I think he would be. I think in baseball, he would be maddening at times, but I think he would be so outrageously beloved. Like in the NBA, like there's times where it's like, all right, Dan's willing to pony up the money and we're excited about him, but obviously we just spent the last 10 minutes grinding our teeth.
Yeah.
I think well, he'd be beloved because he's in a smaller market and be willing to spend like crazy. I mean, you got I see the Reds deal, it popped up right on my screen right here. You know, they got the Sonny Gray deal. They got like 18 owners with the Reds. So they have to like basically hand around a coffee can. Dan Gilbert could just do whatever. And I think that type of thing, when you think about Steinbrenner got banned from baseball. He used to threaten to move the team. People would hate him during the 80s. And by the time he died, he is the boss, and everybody loves him, and everybody wishes he was back.
Right.
And I see the same thing in Dan Gilbert. If Dan Gilbert switched out the Cavaliers for the Indians, I think it'd be something that'd be brilliant some way, somehow. I don't think it'll ever happen. But
it would be entertaining.
Yeah, if he could be the owner tomorrow, I think Indians fans, there'd be some Indians fans who'd be incensed for whatever reason, because, you know, they're sabermetrics fans, and that doesn't mean they're bad baseball fans, obviously. It means they're smarter than me. But I think they'd probably be upset, and there would be something that, okay, well, we'll see how he runs it, because he could always run it right into the ground and spend a whole ton of money, but he would be something that's good for it. But I do think that for what the Dolans have and whatever wherewithal they have, over the last 10 years, 15 years, they've been able to draft better, develop, bring guys up. They got as close as any team has ever gotten without winning it. And if they were truly bad owners, they wouldn't even have been in the World Series. So I don't like to listen to the, well, the Dolans suck and the Dolans are bad owners. No, they're not. But if
seems
I was
like at least a now, professional organization, yeah. If nothing else.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, they and for all the changes that we have to talk about the Browns and Cavs, we never have to talk about the Indians. So there's consistency there. And, you know, I'm just like, well, I used to not be able to stand Larry Dolan when I was younger. And I think it could be so much worse. And it's not. And so it's all right. Dolan 1, Gilbert 2, Jimmy 3. But if they're in the playoffs next year,
I'm charging. Play with
this. Yeah.
Well, I one part of Dan Gilbert that I do like too is that he's an easy scapegoat, and sometimes that's nice to have. It's nice to have kind of that villain that he's going to help the team, he's going to pay, but he's also there if you need someone to blame. And as much as I don't want to admit that, that's definitely part of the calculus too. But Ken, we really do appreciate your time and you coming on. This was a lot of fun. It was a good insight. Really, really enjoyed you coming on here, man.
Oh, man, thank you guys very much for having me, because I like talking to you guys about this, and I like reading your tweets and stuff like that, just because I know I do know that you guys know a hell of a lot more about basketball than I do, so it's always running about you guys and stuff like that. And I'm not just saying that to kiss your ass. I do absolutely mean that. So thank you guys very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I appreciate that a lot, man. And a lot of it's just us kind of talking confidently and making it seem like we know what like we're talking about, but we'll still take your endorsement. So I really appreciate that. You guys make sure you check out Ken on 92.3 The Fan, CBS Sports Radio at night. I got that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. All right.
Saturday's middays now. We just switched.
Oh, there you go. Midday.
Yeah, so I don't have to do the graveyard thing anymore. Thank God.
Oh, that's going to feel nice.
Working late is tough.
Especially with the early morning. It was rough on those Sundays.
And if you guys want to support the podcast as well, remember, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe. It's the best way to support the show. We really do appreciate all the love and support and the fact that you guys are still listening with the team being as bad as it is. So thanks a lot, guys. Thanks, Ken. And until next time, go Cavs.